its quest to provide an open forum for discussion of controversial issues, this station allows hosts and their guests to express themselves without any significant censorship. You're advised that any views expressed by the hosts or their guests are not necessarily the views of Tug Entertainment or its partners.
Welcome to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com. And hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com and 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Officer Radio is your source for the latest news, trends, and issues facing the law enforcement community. Join us each week as Officer Borelli and his guest examine, dissect, and discuss the issues facing our industry. Call in live and join the conversation to get your voice heard. Now, let's get to it. It's Officer Radio, live with Frank Borelli on Officer.com.
Good day and welcome to Officer Radio, brought to you by Officer.com. I'm your host, editor for Officer.com, Frank Borelli. Today we'll be talking about firearms training off the square range. What's that mean? Well, let's think about it. Throughout the history of firearms training, we've had people who stand behind guns and qualify to shoot. They demonstrate basic marksmanship skills. They have to master the basic marksmanship skills of stance, grip, sight alignment, sight picture, breath control, trigger squeeze, and follow through. Very basic stuff. And we've done that throughout history on a square range. In other words, you get in a firing position, you're shooting at a target that's straight downrange from you. There's not a lot of movement. The targets don't move. It's a square range. You're in a fixed position. That's what we mean by the square range. Today, we're going to talk about firearms training off the square range. And that's what we do to master or increase our marksmanship skills beyond the square range that we have typically used and we're happy not to be using anymore. Joining us today is a couple of gentlemen, a gentleman named Paul Markle, who is one of our guest columnists on Officer.com, our regular columnists on Officer.com. Paul was a U.S. Marine in 1987 and served his nation both in times of peace and war. He attended the Ohio Peace Officers Academy in 92, serving numerous communities as a lawman for 17 years. Since 2007, Paul's been a full-time small arms and tactics instructor, having trained literally thousands of U.S. military personnel as well as citizens and law enforcement officers. In addition to running his own company, Paul is the host of Student of the Gun, a weekly television program airing on the Pursuit Channel. We're going to talk about that with him. You can follow Paul and Student of the Gun on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, as well as at studentofthegun.com. Excuse me. Also joining us is a gentleman named Jason Stoddard. He's a patrol sergeant with a large sheriff's agency close to Washington, D.C. He's been in law enforcement for over 18 years, and he served in multiple capacities with the Sheriff's Department. He's currently serves as an adjunct instructor for his department in topics that include defensive tactics, firearms, taser, simunitions, and active shooter response. He also owns and instructs for the Warrior Training Group. As an instructor for his company, he teaches firearms, defensive tactics, active shooter preparedness and response, and the psychology of killing to police officers and military personnel nationwide. Warrior Training Group, his company also runs a storefront, and they have some excellent stuff. I shop there frequently, just so you know. He's an accomplished competitive shooter and represents the United States in worldwide competition. So both of those gentlemen are going to be joining us today as we talk about firearms training off of the square range. Throughout the show, we'll be taking calls from listeners. The number to dial is 866-404-6519. If you have a comment, question, observation, or other thought to share, please don't hesitate to dial me up. If for any reason you're uncomfortable calling, feel free to send an email. The email address is frankborelli@officer.com. No dits, dots, dashes, or spaces, all one word, frankborelli@officer.com. Today's show, like all of them, will be archived on the Officer.com radio page as well as on our podcast page. Now, I understand earlier we had some issues. One of our guests, actually, Jason Stoddard, said that he had checked out the radio page, see what the show was about, see how things were, and he said that we had every one of the links for all the archive shows played just the most recently aired show. So we've corrected that, or we are in the midst of correcting that. All of them are on our podcast page, and we don't have that glitch there for sure and certain. So to find that stuff, if you're on the main officer.com page, go to the Media Center. And on the Media Center, you'll see a link for officer for radio or for podcast. You can find either one that way. I would encourage you to bookmark either one. Some of the expertise that has been voiced through these shows, and I'm not talking about mine, I'm talking about the guests that join us, has just been phenomenal, and I'm glad that we have it archived for use. Hopefully, as you well know, Officer.com has both a Facebook fan page and a Twitter feed. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Not only does it allow us to let you to provide you better information in a more timely fashion, it also allows you to give us feedback on how we're doing and what we can do better. We appreciate that interaction, and it allows us to serve the community, law enforcement community, to the best of our ability. So with all that out of the way, let's get into the show a little bit. As I said earlier, we're going to talk about firearms training off the square range. Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, phenomenally well-known, excellent national speaker, international speaker, I should say, talks about how, during – I think it's World War I, we had to adjust our training tactics. We were teaching people to shoot round targets, and then when they went to war, they had to shoot men, and we had not prepared them mentally to shoot a human figure. We had taught them to shoot bullseyes. So we had to change our training and start using paper. Then we had to use silhouettes that actually looked like a human target, and you get that condition and response. The human target pops up, you shoot it, it falls down. And that was how we were training our soldiers, and it was relatively static at that square range. Now, having been in the military, the last time I qualified with my M16, and it's been a number of years now, about nine of them, give or take, I was in a firing position, and silhouettes would pop up, quite literally pop up targets, and they weren't all in front of me in a single lane. They were within a certain width on the range, and I had to watch that width and all of the distances. So I could have a target pop up at 50 meters, or I could have a target pop up at 300 meters. Wherever it popped up, I had X amount of time to see it, aim at it and engage it. You know what I mean? I had a certain amount of time to get my sights on target and fire off that accurate shot. And that a little bit of improvement from paper targets, static, this position, this distance, shoot, shoot, shoot. So we changed things a little bit. There was a time where we realized targets look different day versus night. You know, what a black silhouette on a white target looks like during the day and what it looks like in low light or what it looks like in the dark is different than what a green silhouette on white paper or what a white silhouette on black paper or what a blue silhouette on green paper. I mean, there's all these different color combinations we can get now. A lot of them still use just a basic human shape. Of course, there are the more realistic targets where you actually have a picture of a person holding a gun or holding a badge. And we use some of those for judgmental shooting. We put officers in stressful conditions, situations, make them go, 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 stop, make a decision. Are you going to shoot or don't shoot? And they have to make that choice. I myself have been through a shoot house where I hate to admit I shot a hostage taker who had taken a hostage. And the hostage taker's weapon of choice was a cassette player. If you guys remember the original Walkman that played a cassette tape. Shot him. It was a beautiful shot right between the eyes, but I never should have shot the guy. His weapon was a tape recorder. He didn't do anything wrong. He wasn't a hostage taker. But my adrenaline was ramped up. My heartbeat was going a million miles an hour. The partner that I was going through that shoot house with congratulated me on my shot and then told me he was going to get his own lawyer for the civil action that would immediately follow, and he was very intelligent in his action. He was picking on me, and I appreciated it. But those things in training happen. We have them happen in training so that we don't have them happen in real life, and we have to evolve our training constantly to take advantage of every new technology that comes out that's of value that we can to improve our training levels, to improve the efficiency of our training, to improve the performance of the people that go on the street and have split seconds to make life and death decisions, and then, have other people spend months analyzing their decision and whether it was right or wrong. Oddly enough, I wrote an article about all this way back in 1999. I probably wrote the article in 98. In 99, I submitted it to a whole bunch of people. And a woman named Ronnie Garrett, a different name at that point, but Ronnie took my article for Law Enforcement Technology Magazine, because the article was about all of the different technologies that we could use to do firearms training properly. And in that article, I said we should start in the classroom. Obviously, we have to start in the classroom. We have to deliver basic knowledge objectives. How does a firearm work? Different for revolver, different for handgun, different for shotgun. How does it work? How do you make sure it's safe, unloaded, no ammunition in it? That matters. How do you maintain it? Field strip, clean, reassemble, function check. Have to teach that stuff. These are things we learn in the classroom. What are the basic marksmanship skills? Stance, grip, sight alignment, sight picture, breath control, trigger press, follow through. Seven basic marksmanship skills. I don't think I'll ever forget them. Between the police departments and the military, I think I got them. They change. It used to be trigger squeeze. Now trigger press is said. There's an ongoing forever debate about whether point shooting or sighted shooting, blah, 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 whatever. We still have things we have to teach in the classroom. Then we need to get on the range and we need to get people shooting from static positions to learn physically to do, perform those mechanical skills. Then we need to get other things going on. When those basic skills, the marksmanship skills, become second nature, then we're starting to reach our goals. Then we're starting to get to the point where we can teach these officers how to incorporate other levels of force, how to use judgment while under stress, to which force do they need to use, which level of force do they need to use. Do they need to shoot? Do they need to not shoot? Before that, do they even need to have their gun in their hand? So we're going to talk about all that and more, I'm sure, with our guests today, Mr. Paul Markle, Mr. Jason Stoddard. We're getting close to our first break. Thank you for being with us. When we come back, we'll have Mr. Paul Markle with us. You can call in at 866-404-6519 if you have a comment, or email it to me at frankborelli@officer.com. Enjoy the break, and we will be back in just a moment with Mr. Paul Markle to discuss it.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. In May of 2011, a small brown-eyed boy proudly showed off the law enforcement buttons he had pinned to his shirt in honor of his dad, an officer killed in the line of duty 6 years ago. Then the reality set in. This boy was just a few days away from his sixth birthday. He never got the chance to meet his dad, nor did thousands of children whose parents' names are forever etched into the living memorial in Judiciary Square. Join us in 2012 as we launch Officer World Expo in Washington, D.C. in our effort to reduce the intolerably large number of officers who didn't get to go home to their families. OfficerWorldExpo.com, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Okay, we will. We're going to teach you how to tell your money where to go. It's Intelligent Investing with Pam Otten on TogiNet. Learn how to be a savvy investor from someone who has your best interest at heart. Pam Otten is a financial advisor who loves to help successful business owners and entrepreneurs understand the mysteries of the investment world, and she's not afraid to share that knowledge. Pam is an unashamed Christian and qualified kingdom advisor, which means she's trained and committed to integrating biblical principles into her financial advice. Pam believes investing isn't rocket science. This is the financial advisor who's in your corner and truly understands and cares about you and helping you achieve your goals. Securities and advisory services are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. It's Intelligent Investing with Pam Otten on TogiNet. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Morelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Welcome back, listeners. I'm Frank Morelli, your host for the show today. We're talking about firearms off the square range. The number you can call in if you have a comment is 866-404-6519, or you can email your comments to me, frankborelli at officer.com. Joining us at this time is Mr. Paul Markle. I gave you his bio earlier. Paul has an exceptional background that runs from the Marine Corps to law enforcement and a decade or more of delivering training. And I wanted to get his insights because I know so much of what he does is well off the square range and inspired by the needs that are fulfilled in that manner. How are you doing this afternoon, sir?
I'm doing fantastic, Frank. Thanks for having me on.
It is a great pleasure. Now, but before we go into off the square range stuff, I know you're the host of a show called Student of the Gun. We talked about it earlier, airs on the Pursuit Channel. What is a student of the gun?
Well, the student of the gun, it's not a beginner or a novice, although you could be one of those two things. Student of the gun represents a more of a life's journey of education, enlightenment, and enjoying the use of firearms.
Okay.
So learning never ends. It shouldn't end.
Oh, no, we're in agreement there. To me, the best instructor is the perpetual student, but the best instructor also realizes that they don't know everything. And, well, as you and I both well know, as veteran instructors, there's some instructors out there that are sure they're the end-all, be-all, and they don't care what's coming out of your mouth. You're wrong and they're right, and I would encourage people to avoid those instructors, as I'm sure you would too.
Well, the best instructors are actually the guys that go out of their own pocket. They leave their comfort zone. They leave their little pond, and they go out and they train with the other guys. Now, they're not necessarily going to change the way they do things, but you need to get out of your pond. I think the one of the phrases is drinking your own bathwater or breathing your own oxygen there. You
right.
need to get away from your own pond to find out what's going on. And the best instructors in the nation are guys that do those very things.
You and I are in agreement, and we do that when we see each other. We agree on that every time we see each other, I think. Listen, let's talk about this. The square range obviously has its pros and cons in the opening segment of the show. I was talking about the basic stuff that the square range is well suited for, the mastering basic marksmanship. But it's
exactly.
very poorly suited for other things. Give me some thoughts on what the well-suited for part.
Well, the square range is a place to start, not to stop. And unfortunately, too many guys start there, they master the square range, and they don't go beyond it. Because you know how we are, we're tied into our egos. We don't want to do anything that doesn't look good, so we master what we do well, and then we don't do anything else. And if you're in charge of training up guys, you have to ask yourself, what's my goal? Is my goal recreational shooting? I mean, if your goal is just to be able to shoot a tin can off of a stump, you know, from 10 yards, then you don't really need to worry about anything else. But if your goal is to teach people to fight with a gun, you need to teach them to think with a gun in their hand. And unfortunately, Frank, I think too often we create shooting robots on the square range, guys that really are afraid to do anything without the command. I think you've been on those ranges where you will not do anything until given X command, and then after you're given X command, and rather than teaching people to think or to make decisions, which is what if you've got a gun in your hand and you're on the street and someone's trying to make you dead, you've got a lot of decisions to make real quick. And you don't want the first time you make a decision with a gun in your hand to be on the street. You want it to be part of your training.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people miss that. Now, without leaving the square range, what can we do to prepare these people beyond basic marksmanship?
Okay. Yeah, I've had guys say, well, you know, we don't have $1 million shoot house, so what are we supposed to do? Well, it's if you have some land, you've got a big pile of earth to catch bullets, you can do good training. One thing that I really like the use of is shapes, colors, and numbers on targets. You line your guys up, and now where people will make the mistake is they'll say, all right, shooters, during the next course of fire, you're going to shoot dot number one. Is everyone ready? stand by, and fire. Well, that's right. Not really teaching them to think. What you tell the student instead is, okay, I will call out a number or a shape or a color, and that is the one you will engage. So the guy standing there, he's looking at it. He sees he has four or five different choices, maybe six different choices, and he's waiting on your command. Now, some people might think, you're splitting hairs there, but no, actually, you're teaching them to think. You're teaching them to make a decision. And if you've got guys walking around out on the streets, they need to be able to make a decision, a quick decision and a correct decision with a gun in their hand.
Okay, so quite simple, you make them think a little bit before they have to pull the trigger. What if they don't have that shape, color, or number?
Well, I mean, I like to use reactive steel targets. Reactive steel targets are great. You say, well, what if it only, you know, if I hit it and it doesn't fall? Well, it's supposed to fall. Keep shooting it. You know, if it takes four shots to make it fall, great. If it takes one shot to make it fall, great. You don't want them to. The worst thing you can do is have guys, and I think you've probably seen this, Frank, the double tap mentality where guys pull their guns, fire two rounds, and they're back in the holster before they even, you know, think about it. And it translates to the street. There's guys who have done that in the street. I mean, we've seen the dash cam videos. Guy whip out his gun, fire two shots, reholster, and the bad guy's still standing in front of him.
Yeah.
Well, where did he learn that? He learned that on the range.
And if nothing else, that's why I like to hear the instructor say, you know, you're going to engage with X number of rounds. Check your environment. Holster when safe. Well, if the threat's not down, it's not safe. Why would you holster? And obviously, the better way of doing it is if you've got that steel target that you can shoot it till it falls, and it might take two shots, it might take eight shots, you've got to keep engaging the target until the threat's been removed.
Exactly. And it teaches steel is expensive, but the great thing about steel is once you have it, you can shoot it thousands of times. So you really get your money's worth out of it. They've got the bobber targets. I mean, go to your favorite steel target warehouse, and they've got all kinds of tools for you to use.
Oh, no doubt. So what can be done on the square range today that we're completely neglecting? I mean, and in the emails we've exchanged leading up to today, I mentioned wounded shooter drills, malfunction drills, downed officer drills. How much of that stuff do you actually do on a square range in the training that you deliver?
Well, one of the things that I really like to do is, and I've started teaching it recently, is what I call a one-box workout. A lot of guys will say, well, we only have a limited budget for ammunition. Okay, rock on. Start with one box of 50. Do one magazine, two-handed, focus on your front sight, and then switch to single-handed. Do another magazine, single-handed, strong hand only. All right, you did good. Next one, do a weak-handed only. Then work on magazine exchange drills, and then work on either your draw or your pickup drills. And with one box of ammunition, you can get a real solid practice session in without just generating, you know, empty brass and making noise.
Yeah, and you know, one of the best classes I ever took was one of the classes I hated the most when I was taking it. I got some training, and I know you know the guys from Strategos, Vaughn Baker and Mark Warren and those guys. Mm-hmm. I took a low light class, and they were talking about being a bilateral shooter, being equally good with your strong hand or your off hand, and I had made a mention to one of them at a lunch break that I really, really hated shooting with my offhand. That, you know, if there was any way in hell I could ever get the gun in my strong hand, I would always do that. I just didn't like putting it in my offhand. So they were nice enough for that class, and I'm a right-handed shooter. They were nice enough for the class to get me all left-handed gear and made me go through the entire week-long program with left-handed gear. And by the time that week was over, I really didn't care which hand my gun was in, but I definitely needed to do that. So it was one of those things that I guess it was like basic training. You know, it really wasn't fun to do it, but when you look back on it, you see the value of it.
You're glad you did it. Well, yeah, I've actually had students shoot left-handed or weak-handed or off-handed, whatever you want to call it, and do really well on paper, and then they kind of look at you like, wow, I didn't think I would do this well. Well, you know why? It's because they're unfamiliar with it, so they force themselves to go back to the fundamentals. They force themselves to actually focus hard on that front sight and press the trigger. Whereas with the right hand, they're like, yeah, I'm good to go. I don't have to worry about it so much. I know what I'm doing. Then it gets in the left hand, and they really force themselves to focus. And I say, well, why don't you do that with both hands, and you'll be good.
Let me ask you this. So after we've done everything we can do on the square range, where are we supposed to go next? I mean, we have other options out there as far as force-on-force training, tools that are available, you know, shoot houses where you can do live fire training on static targets as you move, having to make the judgments as you go. And I fessed up to an oopsie in the opening segment. I don't know if you heard it. I went through, and I know you're familiar with a beautiful facility down in Moyock, North Carolina. I was going through a shoot house down there, and I shot dead a hostage taker whose only weapon was a cassette player. It was a beautiful shot, right between the eyes, perfect tee, but he didn't have a weapon. So
was he a collaborator?
No, he really wasn't. I can't even. It was a nice joke, but my shooting partner was Ralph Moroz, and he looked at me and he went, "I'm getting my own lawyer." I went, "Okay, Ralph, no problem." But
well, you know,
we've got,
and
I tell you, we're under
2 minutes
to the break. But where do we go after the square range? What do we do next?
Well, I think, you know, it's dependent on your motivation and your budget. And if you want, are we breaking right now? Or do we
no,
want to talk
I'll let this? You know. They're nice enough to give me 2 minute, 1 minute, 30 second, 10 second. And
okay.
Paul, I know we talked about you just being here for the first segment. We've got plenty to talk about. If you can hang out for the break and stay with us, fantastic. If you can't,
yeah, I can hold through the break, Frank.
Okay. So I'll let you know. I'll cut you off when we got to go to break. But we're going to leave a square range. Where do we go next? What do we do? How do we best perfect our skills for the real world survival shooting? And I just got the 1 minute mark. How do we prepare ourselves for that?
Well, I'd say if you're an agency on a budget, get yourself some airsoft guns.
Okay.
Start with the airsoft guns that are pneumatic. They work. Crossman has a couple of great ones that work on CO2 cartridges, and you can use office buildings, you can use your back office, you can use you know, any facility you have to work the angles and work force on force guys.
Okay. So that's a low cost, inexpensive way of doing the force on force stuff. Obviously we got to have the safety equipment to do that and the place to do it.
Well, you have to have the face masks. For sure.
Right.
You want to protect the eyes, ears, and nose, and throat. But once you've done that, you really just need to invest in a couple of good guns, some BBs to go with them.
Okay. Let's talk about, so we're going to come back for break. Hang with me. When we come back, we'll get back into airsoft and the safety issues. Is that good?
I'll be here.
All right, man.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these. Ceasing Me is on TogiNet, a delightful, thoughtful, serious, and not-so-serious call-in show with Cecil Murphy and Twyla Belk. Tuesday nights at 8, 7 Central on TogiNet.com. You know Cease is the veteran author from 90 Minutes in Heaven, Gifted Hands, When a Man You Loved Was Abused, and many other books, as well as a mentor for writers. And Twyla Belk is an effervescent force known as the Gotta Tell Somebody Gal. She's also a writer and motivational speaker who's always bragging on God. For more on Cecil Murphy, go to his website, CecilMurphy, that's PHEY.com. And for Twyla, GottaTellSomebody.com. The show, Cease and Me, is a far-reaching, faith-based shared conversation and call-in show with questions welcome. A chance to get everything out in the open, from questions about writing to surviving sexual abuse to the topics of the day, all from a Christian worldview to help you. Cease and Me, Cecil Murphy, Twyla Belk, Tuesday evenings at 8, 7 Central on TogiNet.com.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. Join thousands of other law enforcement professionals attending Police Week, May 12th through the 17th, 2012, in Washington, D.C. The new Officer World Expo at Police Week will offer training, conference sessions, and networking opportunities to better equip those who protect others. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon again, listeners. We're here with Mr. Paul Markle. If you have a comment for either of us, the call-in number is 866-404-6519, or you can email me comments to frankborelli@officer.com. When I cut Paul off before the break because, well, our show producers are wonderfully stuck to their time limits, and I appreciate them for what they do, but I had to cut Paul off, and we were talking about airsoft and using that as an inexpensive opening into force-on-force training, Paul. So what were you saying? I know you were talking about protecting the ear, nose, and throat. Continue on after that, sir.
Airsoft guns, I've been using them for a decade or more since I first discovered them, and they've gotten better and better as time's gone by, and more readily available. I was just at the Academy Outdoors, and I noticed that Crossman had two CO2-powered replica pistols, one that looks like a Beretta M9 and the other one that looked like a Smith & Wesson Sigma, and they're powered by standard CO2 cartridges that you can get in any, you know, Kmart, Walmart, wherever you're at, and they shoot the 6mm BBs. The great thing about them is, yeah, if you get hit with it, you're not going to enjoy it. It's going to sting, but it's not going to kill you. So you get basically a paintball face mask set that protects your eyes and nose and throat and mouth. And I would go from there. I would really caution dudes against letting people armor up like the Michelin Man.
Yes.
People say, it's going to hurt. So they wear like four hooded sweatshirts and long johns and everything. Well, if it's not going to hurt, you're not going to get the value from the training. We both know that if it's going to sting, people will actually take steps to not get shot.
Yes. I mean, that's the whole point of force-on-force training, is that the pain penalty, when you do something you shouldn't have done and you get that bite, you get that sting, you learn. And because of it, the next time you go in, then your sympathetic nervous system gets activated, and now you're under stress and your heart's racing and your respiration's increased, and now we're actually getting that deep mental capacity learning going on. That's so important.
Exactly.
People miss that so much.
Exactly, and unfortunately, you get guys, you know, trainers, they'll allow it. They'll allow guys to armor up with the gloves and padded sweatshirts and all that, and they're not getting anything out of it because, hey, they feel like they're invincible. They can just charge into the room and take a dozen shots, and that's not reality. That's not good training. And I guess that really brings us to an excellent point is if you're going to do, whether it's simmunitions or, ATK, I think you're familiar with, they've got a new force-on-force marking cartridge.
Yep.
That works in the simmunitions guns, and I've used them, and they're fantastic. They're clean burning. It's a good system. But regardless of the tools you have, it really comes down to the instructor and the guy who's running the exercise. I mean, we both know, I'm sure you've experienced, you know, training sessions that devolved into, you know, basically a horseplay adventure. And you don't want that. I mean, it's got to be structured, and you've got to have the referee guy to control everybody. Otherwise, you just got a bunch of cops running around shooting each other in the butts with airsoft guns, and that doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, and I think most importantly, at least in my experience, you have to have role players that obey the choreography. You know, I mean, when I'm trying to prompt a certain behavior, I don't need a role player who's alpha on his own program. I need him to understand, okay, that, dude, I need you to do A, B, C, and D, and then this person should shoot you, and if they don't, then we need to critique that. We need to adjust that. We need to fix that. But if you're not – the role player has to be controlled by the instructor and not be the Wild West type. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Well, and you don't want to put your officers into no-win training scenarios where it doesn't matter what they do, they're going to get shot up. And eventually they say, well, why should I even do this? I'm going to lose every time I play the game, so I'm just going to stop playing it. Yeah, you want to – there. It should be winnable. If they do it correctly, they should be able to win. However, if they make those mistakes, you know, then you want to penalize them and teach them those mistakes in training. The worst thing in the world is having these guys improvising or free-forming it out on the street because it's the first time they've ever experienced that.
Yeah, and you know, the other side of that too, though, is the people that you see the officers go in and they take that airsoft hit in their knee or in their hip, and you see them stop, and they go, "Okay, I've been shot."
Yeah, and
That just eats me up. I'm like, wait a minute. You're so what? You're just going to give up? You're just going to roll over? You got hit with one little 6mm BB, and in your head that killed you? What are you thinking? You know, come on. I'm not dying today. I don't know about the rest of you. You can blow my heart out of my chest. At a very bare minimum, I'm not going alone. I know that. And sometimes outlook to teach.
You're right, Frank. I've seen that too. And you teach them, say, okay, we'll critique the hits. You keep doing it. You do what you know you have to do. After action, we'll talk about, okay, you got shot in the thigh, you got shot in the arm, and we'll take care of that. But you keep doing what you need to do. And I was recently at a training academy, and when we were doing the classroom briefing, the instructor said, he goes, right now, he said, somewhere between 80 and 85% of all people that are shot with handguns in the United States leave the hospital under their own power within 72 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's striking. You know, we have really good hospitals, and we have really good trauma care, and handguns are relatively weak. They are. And your students need to know that. And we don't carry handguns because they're the most powerful thing on the block. We carry them because it's convenient to always have on you.
And because so many of our chiefs are so concerned about what the public outcry would be if we all started walking around with M4s AR-10s.
Well, you don't want the citizens tinkling down their legs, you know, and we can't have that.
I'm trying to think of a good – you know, I got to be professional. I've got to maintain that demeanor. We can't have that. We don't want to scare the citizens into submission.
We want the citizens
to look at us as helpful, professional people. But, you know, it's a different society. You've been overseas. You've been to Israel. You've been to these places where the law enforcement's the military, or they're a lot more military-like. And seeing them walk around with select fire weapons is so common every place, every day. Nobody cares. It doesn't bother anybody.
Oh, yeah. I was in Rome International Airport, and the Roman Carabinieri, they're walking around with their Beretta Modello 12 submachine guns strapped to their chests, and no one gives it a second thought. It's just the way they do business.
It's unique to me. You know, right after the attacks of September 11th, a National Guard unit that I used to be in, an infantry, light infantry unit, was on physical security detail at Baltimore Washington International Airport, and they were all walking around with their M16s, and nobody seemed to mind. But if we did that today, you know, 10 years later, somebody would say we were overreacting, or somebody would talk about the fear that they felt or something. For as much of a gun culture as people in the world seem to think America is, we seem to have a really big fear about walking around with guns.
We've kind of taken a left turn, but while we're on the left turn, after Hurricane Katrina, I was part of a law enforcement contingent, as were someone else that I know, that went down to kind of restore order in New Orleans after it was all over. Well, we were carrying long guns. We had long guns and we had pistols, and the citizens that we encountered, the good citizens of the area, they never were afraid of us at all. They welcomed us with open arms. I mean, I had a little old lady walk up to me. I'm standing there dressed like, you know, G.I. Joe with my vest on and all that, come up and put her arm around me and hug me and thank me for being there. And you know what? I had an evil black rifle in my hand, and it didn't scare her, but it did seem to scare the news reporters that were on scene. So I think the good citizens of the United States recognize good guys, and they appreciate armed good guys, but some people who live in the Beltway don't appreciate that.
Well, it is what it is. Oops, sorry, folks. That's what happens when you type and then you hit the wrong button while somebody's on the radio talking to you. Yeah, we did kind of take a left-hand turn there, but we've got some time left. Let's when we're doing getting back on track, when we're doing the force-on-force stuff, it's an excellent opportunity to practice without fatal repercussions, wounded shooter drills, malfunction drills, downed officer drills, if the weapons you're using are of the proper mechanical function. Now, I happen to have an Airsoft M4 that I love, and thank God for the bright orange tip, because otherwise somebody would think it was a real gun, and that can be an ugly situation. But is there in your experience, have there been people doing that kind of training with them? Something beyond the shoot, don't shoot. Are they being used?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. quite frankly, I mean, the training is only limited by the motivation and creativity of the lead instructor. I mean, I've seen instructors with limited budgets do fantastic things because they were motivated. They weren't just warming a chair in the firearms training office. They actually were motivated to get the most out of it. And that's one thing that bugs me is, I was a career cop, and I had to listen to the, well, we would do more training, but we just don't have the budget. Well, that's right. Bologna sausage, and you know it is. It's an easy way out. You know, if you hand me $1 million, then maybe I'll do some training. And training is based on, it's not free, but you can do a lot with a little if you're motivated and if you're creative.
Yes, I have seen some of the most interesting targets in the world made out of paper plates.
Or use pizza boxes.
Yes, I've seen that too, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah.
So I know I'm waiting for the producer to give me my time limit. I know we're getting probably close to the end of this segment at 2 minutes. He's laughing at me.
Can we pimp Student of the Gun real quick?
Yes, absolutely. I was getting ready to say, I need to know when it's on and how our listeners can watch it, because it is an excellent program.
Okay, if you have Dish or DirecTV, you've got the Pursuit Channel. The Pursuit Channel is where Student of the Gun is airing right now. You can watch it Tuesdays at 1:30 Eastern or Thursdays at 5:30 Eastern. So, hey, today after you listen to me on the radio, you can go watch the TV show. It's Channel 608 on Direct and Channel 240 on Dish. Now, if you don't have either one of those, you're not out of luck. You can go to studentofthegun.com and you can follow us. I mean, we're all over the internet. We've got a Facebook link. Paul G. Markle is my friend Facebook. We've got a Twitter link, and we have a YouTube account that is Student of the Gun TV on YouTube. And we've got shows posted up there. And if you want to go to the Pursuit Channel, all the shows are posted on the Pursuit Channel under the Student of the Gun logo, and you can click on them. You can watch the episodes the week after they air. So those are a lot of different ways you can go.
And I know we're under a minute now for this segment. I know you guys have merchandising and you got DVDs and everything else, right?
Oh, yeah. Student of the Gun gear. I've got a training DVD that I've been promoting the last couple of months or so. So check it out. Studentofthegun.com.
And Mr. Paul Markle, you are also a published author. We got about 30 seconds. Tell me real fast. Books?
Got them out there? Actually, I wrote a book called Have Passport, Will Travel. And I write for NRA, Harris Publications, and, of course, officer.com.
Yes, sir. Mr. Markle, thank you for being with us today. We greatly
Thanks
appreciate it. We'll
me.
Have to have you back in the near future.
Listeners,
we're getting ready to sign off for our last break of the show. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mr. Jason Stoddard of the Warrior Training Group to continue this conversation about firearms off the square range. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for being with us. Talk to you in a few.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. 152. The number of law enforcement fatalities in 2010. The numbers are too high. Any line of duty death is unacceptable. Join us in Washington, D.C. next year during National Police Week at the first ever Officer World Expo as we combine a unique training opportunity with the largest police memorial in the United States. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com for details and to join the mailing list, Officer World Expo, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
In today's business world, a helping hand or idea that doesn't come with an invoice is a treasured find. And if that happens to you, then you need to pay it forward to keep other entrepreneurs from making mistakes or getting a raw deal. It's called Paying It Forward with Josephine Gerasi, Wednesday mornings at 10, 9 a.m. Central. Josephine is going to have the guests describe their accomplishments, the lessons they've learned, both good and bad, and then sharing those pieces of knowledge as we create a movement of paying it forward. For more information about Josephine, her business, and background, you can go to MyMomKnowsBest.com.
Josephine Girasi has always been a problem solver. She saw this need and has turned it into a movement. It's Paying It Forward, with tips, tools, and advice, and hard lessons learned. These pieces of knowledge can make a huge difference for you, your business, and others. So join us for Paying It Forward with Josephine Girasi, Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central, on TogiNet.com.
Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon, listeners, and welcome back to Officer.com Radio. Officer Radio on Officer.com, excuse me. I'm Frank Borelli, your host. If you have a comment, something you want to add to the conversation, the call-in number is 866-404-6519, or you can email your comments to me, Frank Borelli at Officer.com. Excuse me, lunch was good, forgive me. We're joined for this last segment of the show by Mr. Jason Stoddard, Sergeant Jason Stoddard. He is a patrol deputy and a veteran instructor. Jason, thanks for being with us today. How you doing, buddy?
Thanks, Frank. I appreciate it.
You doing okay?
Absolutely, sir.
Are you still worried about being on the show, whether or not it's going to go over well? We're going to be all right?
We're going to be fine, Frank.
Not a doubt in my mind, brother. I wouldn't have you on the show otherwise. Listen, today we're talking about firearms training, and it's off the square range. You know very well what that means. You've been doing training for quite some time. Let me ask you your opinion on something, strictly your opinion. Are we, as firearms instructors, as directed by our agencies, whatever, are we adequately preparing our basic police officers when they come out of the academy? Have they had all the training they need to go on the street and be prepared for the lethal force encounters?
Well, I think it takes a lot to do that. We spend, in a six-month police academy, you spend 4 months of that, or you spend 80% of that time learning how not to be sued, and about 20% of the time learning the skills that we need to survive on the street. That kind of doesn't make much sense. We're losing officers at a remarkable rate. As you said before, many of those officers are dying deaths that could have been prevented. I think we can do a lot more with what we're given. I've been listening to the show. What Mr. Markle said about motivation of the instructors has a lot to do with it. The fundamentals that these guys are learning in the academy are wonderful things. The fundamentals turn into their qualification scores, but qualification doesn't necessarily equal survival. We have to teach them how to survive, and that's a two-part process. Either it involves their mental preparation as well as their physical preparation.
Okay, so we're really not doing enough, and they could face things out there. I know we, in our email exchange preparing for the show, there's things that a guy one day out of the academy can face and have to deal with, like an active shooter event or a multi-vector terrorist attack. And I mean, different jurisdictions have different risks for that stuff, but what do we need to do? What do we need to add in the academy, at the academy level, to really have these guys come out of the street, out onto the street, prepared as the warriors we need them to be?
I think it's a four-part process. First, they have to have the classroom, whether it be the fundamentals, and then it be the mental preparation to actually pull the trigger on another human being. It's not as easy as Hollywood makes it out to be. Once we get through that, then they need to do the basic qualifications. And from there, a scenario-based firearms program that includes their live fire weapons, whether that be scenario-based coming out of your police car, whether that be scenario-based with steel only, shooting and moving, those things are paramount. They have to get those skills. And then the last thing would be what you guys were talking about with the airsoft guns or the simunitions, depending on your budget, that force and unforce, the decision-making behind the trigger, looking down the sights at another human being and putting the person in that situation. Many academies are doing a lot of that, but it boils down to time and getting people out on the street. We're all short with manpower. We're all suffering from the point that we don't have enough qualified applicants, and we want to get people into the police cars to run the calls. Unfortunately, we're putting a lot of ill-prepared people into our profession that don't know what this is all about and what could end up very, very badly for them.
Yes, and a lot of them make those decisions and those commitments without being fully aware, and I think that's in some ways we try to emotionally protect them, And I think we do them a disservice. I mentioned Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman earlier, and I know you're a fan of his. I've been to your shop, seen his books on your shelf, and we've discussed it. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for simply making people aware of all the different emotional roller coaster rides they can go on, whether they pull the trigger or not, but most assuredly after they have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I teach a program called The Psychology of Killing. It's a very controversial program. I've traveled all over the country and taught it. But for a majority of the police officers that sit in the class, it's an eye-opening experience. And we're talking veteran police officers who are no different than the videotapes that we're watching, the dash cam videos. And one of the questions that I ask them is, what makes you any different than the officer on the screen? What makes you've all sat through an academy, you've all went through in-service, you've all done the qualifications. What makes your preparation better? What makes it so that if you face the same scenario, you'll survive? And, you know, as Mr. Markle said, a lot of it is stuck on our egos. I've never, in the thousands of police officers that have heard me speak, had a single officer come up to me and say, that's me on the screen. That could have been me. We tend to sit there and not think that or believe that it could be us, and we overemphasize what our skills are. We overbelieve what our skills are. And as was said earlier, learning never ends. We're never all going to be perfect. We're never all going to have the solutions for everything. But we have to, in our training, prepare these guys better for what they're going to see on the street. The criminals that we're facing aren't the same criminals that we had out here a decade ago. We're seeing a lot of new things. A lot of new tactics, a lot of training that these guys are going through. We can't be stuck in what we believed 10 years ago are the tactics that are going to survive today. It has to move forward.
Let me ask you something. Talking about that moving forward, should we be integrating self-trauma care into our firearms training somewhere?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have to be our own best friend. When we're out there, every police officer that's on the street should have at least a basic understanding of what is referred to as TCCC care. It's up to us. If you're in a live fire situation and either you or your buddy gets hit, the medics aren't coming in until the scene is safe. It's up to us to extend that golden hour. A good TCCC class you can do in 4 hours, and a lot of that, you can do a lot of practicals in that. The three leading causes of death in combat are non-surgically repairable head wounds, extremity bleeding, and penetrating chest wounds. We can help fix those bottom two things. Extremity bleeding with some of the technology that's out there with the hemostatic agents. It takes very little knowledge to utilize. They've come a long way in the last couple of years. It needs to be something that we're teaching every cop that goes out on the street. Every cop that goes out on the street should have the basics of at least a tourniquet, a hemostatic agent, some type of compression bandage, and something to deal with a chest wound. It doesn't cost that much money. You can get all that in a nice little kit for under $100. And if it saves you or your buddy, that $100 is the best $100 you'll ever spend.
Go ahead, Frank. Sorry, I was being very agreeable. I mean, for $100, if I can save my life, I'll spend that $100 a couple of times over. Tell me something. What's T, for the people who don't know, what's TCCC stand for?
Tactical Combat Care. And you know, the whole concept of that is it's short and it's quick. And even if you don't have this quote unquote kit that you can purchase, things that you can use that are on your body, understanding what it takes to stop an arterial bleed. You can use your belt, your inner belt. You could use your Sam Brown belt if you needed to. If you can get behind some cover and provide some treatment to you. And one of the officers in the North Hollywood shootout almost bled to death, and nobody had talked to him about the utilizing of your inner belt. He was took cover behind a tree, was out of the line of fire at the time, and he almost died because he wasn't trained. And those are the things that we need to get out here to our officers. They're just as important as your legal updates and as your report writing and everything else.
I would think they're a little bit more important than that, but okay. Well, I know where you're coming from. Let me ask you this. You know, I'm an active shooter instructor, and I actually went through the schools here in Southern Maryland. Are there other team shooting skills that we should be teaching to our cops that the average everyday patrol officer, not that I think any of them are average or everyday, but you know what I'm trying to say, should we be teaching them fire maneuver school skills and moving under directed fire, what the military would call cover fire? Or is this stuff that we should be teaching, and in your experience traveling nationally, is it being taught?
I haven't found it in very many places being taught, but it's a skill that we need. Since the active shooter stuff came out after Columbine, and we all started to get trained up on that, they did a great job overall of teaching us once we get to the door, how to get in the door and what to do. But a lot was left up to our own interpretation as far as how we got to the door. The directed fire or the suppression fire is a valuable technique that needs to be taught. There are several agencies that are teaching it. I think it's something that we see more on the West Coast, and it moves eastward. And one day we'll all understand it and we'll all get it. But it needs to speed up quite a bit. As I said before, things have changed. We cannot allow the thought process that everything's the same as it was in the 90s, or everything is the same as it was in the 80s, or even 2 years ago. Things have changed. We've never seen anything like Mumbai until Mumbai happened. And the use of cover and suppressing fire in a multifaceted active shooter type scenario like that is a valuable technique. It's classified in police work as directed fire. You don't see too many agencies doing it, and it's probably a lack of understanding, or it's a lack of policy for it. But it is a valuable technique. It needs to be something that we're all taught. And probably one of the best things that I found, and when I have been able to teach directed fire, suppression fire, everybody's seen the videos of the Navy SEALs doing the fire maneuver and how they turn and move away. Cops love to learn that stuff. They love to look like that, and we need to teach those things, even if it's for a canine track in the woods, or for moving for an officer down drill or something like that. They need to understand how to keep the bad guy's head down if he's behind cover.
And Jason, we're gonna end it with that. I got a 1 minute left on this window, and I want to make a comment on something you just said. So, thank you very much for being with us. I greatly appreciate it. Want to have you back again. Warrior Training Group, WTGTactical.com is your website. I want to make sure we get that out there. But on that comment, how we want to look. Most of us want to look, well, all of us, we all want to look like that hero, that warrior, you know, the John Wayne and the Green Berets and the Navy SEALs guys that are high speed, low drag. And we all want to look that way. But the reality is that if our training is insufficient, if our training isn't accurate. In other words, if we're training cops for stuff that's not realistic, if our training's insufficient, then when everything hits the fan, we don't look like that. We look like Pee-wee Herman trying to dance his way off a roof or something, and none of us wants to go there. So thank you for having made that observation. Listeners, that's our time for today. We will be back next Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern. This is Officer Radio coming to you from Officer.com. Thank you for being here. Stay safe on the streets.
Thank you for being a part of Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Each week, Officer Radio